this week in tennis.
Hey, Craig, the summer hard court season is in full swing, and so are we. What's happening, man?
It absolutely is in full swing, Phil. Unfortunately, I'm not in full swing because I've had a bit of a losing week last week in Washington.
Oh, I had a horrible week this week. Last week, I came through at the end. You know, I picked up about 10 units on the weekend. But it's all in-game betting, right? That's the way to do this now. I've come to this conclusion that that is the way to do this. But this has been an unpredictable week in Toronto. The draws have been horrific and been tough sledding. But we'll see if we can't help you navigate it today on This Week in Tennis. My name's Phil Nasens. He's Craig Doyle. We've been doing this podcast a very long time, the longest running tennis podcast anyway. And we're really excited to be here. And we took a couple weeks off. I'm finished with rehab now, so we can get back into the swing of things maybe. But I have to tell you, this Toronto event has been crazy, really crazy. This Danielle Collins has decided to really go wild, play strong. She's not the only one. What are your thoughts about these this week and last week even in Washington? I thought that was a good event for Coco Gauff. And I thought it was a great event for Dan Evans. But outside of that, it wasn't a great event for people like Francis Tiafoe and others. Washington was tough, Craig.
It was, but I don't put a lot of stock in Washington. Like, you and I are going to talk about the Open in a couple of weeks' time. That's the big one at the end of this month. I don't put a lot of stock in the results in Washington or in Toronto or Montreal for what's going to happen in New York in a few weeks' time. I think we're too far away from that. There's plenty of people coming in cold to Washington. They've probably not played since Wimbledon. That's their first real hit on the hard court surfaces. So guys like Tiafoe, I think, are going to get better. We're going to see an upside on them come New York. It's certainly, there's been surprise winners. Like, you know, I won't back Dan Evans. He's a guy who hasn't won a match since Barcelona in April. So for him to come in and win Washington was a major surprise. But there's certainly there's a few things we can take from it. I'm just not going to be betting my house on some of these people who are winning these events being the one standing with the trophy in New York come the first week of September.
You know what? That's a good observation, and it's completely true. I don't see Washington. I see it as a stepping stone to the U.S. Open, part of the U.S. Open series. Taylor Fritz started off the hard court season pretty strong. He won Atlanta. He came darn close to winning Washington, crashed out yesterday. He's someone who needs to have a big U.S. Open. As he heads into Cincinnati next week, what do you want to see from Taylor Fritz? I want to see a semifinal at least. That's what I want to see.
At the Open or next week?
Next week in Cincinnati.
Next week. I think it's favorable for him next week because that court in Cincinnati plays pretty quick and he's got a big game there. I think he'll enjoy the court and the conditions there. The pace of it's going to be really suited to what he does. So I think it'll be a big week for him there. But I think he then needs to back that one up. He needs to get to at least the quarterfinals at the U.S. Open. He can't have a repeat of previous years where he's gone out in the first round.
Well, no, he can't. He's playing much better. You know, he has that confidence. He's a good ball player, though. You know, he's got a big serve. He's got that weapon. You need a weapon to win on hard courts. And he has that weapon. Yeah, quarterfinal. I would think that if he doesn't reach at least the quarterfinals in New York, then he's going to feel like his season was a disappointment. You know, being in the top 10 in the world is not a disappointment, though. That's a Herculean achievement, and good for him. But you know how America is. Well, you saw that with the women's national team, right? If they don't win, nobody gives a rat's ass. And that's where Taylor Fritz is at right now. Francis Tiafoe is another. I think that, you know, when you look at this U.S. Open coming up, and then, like I said, we have Cincinnati next week, you have this situation for Tiafoe and a Casper Ruud. They have a lot of points to defend in New York City. And I think that those two absolutely need to see some results, and they need to see them rather quickly, I think. I think Tiafoe, I know he had a great grass court season. He hasn't really backed that up. I understand he's the host in Washington. He played doubles with his buddies to open up the tournament. I think it's a great thing that he did. He had his charity. You know, when you're the host, you've got a lot of responsibilities. That's his home club. So you have to. He's expected and wants to make that tournament a success. So I didn't think he would win that one. But I would suspect highly that if he's going to take home a hard court title this calendar season, it's going to be in Cincinnati. Because that court plays lightning fast. The fans eat this kid up, right? So I think he has a good shot in Cincinnati.
They do. He's got a great personality, right? He's got that charisma. You can get on board with this guy. When he's rolling the crowd, particularly in the U.S., they're getting behind him. But even elsewhere, they get behind him because they like him. But he's not performed in Cincinnati last year. You know, he's kind of, I think he went out round the 32. He needs to deliver this year in Cincinnati and get rolling again, because the U.S. Open's fast coming up. He reached the semifinal last year. It was a big story on the Netflix Breakpoint documentary. So it's something like, if he, you know, 720 points on his card, he's defending at the U.S. Open. If he isn't rolling by the time he comes on the U.S. Open, he's going to lose a lot of points off his ranking, and he ain't going to be anywhere near the top 10 come late September if he doesn't have a good showing at the Open. I mean, I looked this morning, he's got about 3,000 points on the board. That's what it takes to get in the top 10, 3,000 points. You lose 720 off that, yeah, you're going to drop back down closer to the bottom end of the top 20. So this is a really big stage in the season for Francis Tiafoe, and I wish this guy luck because I want to see him succeed.
You know what? I do too. He's fun, right? He packs the seats. Everywhere he goes, that place is full. You know, he has that charisma too.
And he makes you put the TV on as well. You know, if you see him on the billing, you could put this guy on the night session because people are tuning to watch this guy.
And they'll pay to watch him,
big
too.
He's a big draw in the U.S. You also mentioned Fritz. I mean, I think we're going to see him in the night session as well at the U.S. Open. He's a guy who lost in the first round last year, so his ranking's probably going to go up the way. As long as he gets himself out of that first round and you know, I think he's, as I said, quarterfinals, second week. He's going to draw some nice ranking points, maybe push himself up a few places, look towards getting into the tour finals at the end of the year. I think we're going to see some big things at the U.S. Open from these guys. And I think the organizers at the USTA, they're going to expect these guys to deliver big in the night sessions for the primetime viewers.
Well, of course they will. And I think that both of those guys can. Sebi Korda is another one you're probably going to see on center court. I don't know how far he'll go. I'm not really sold all the way on Sebi. I love the kid. His father's an amazing guy. But his whole family is, actually. I'm just not sold on Korda, but I'm sure he doesn't have that same appeal that Francis has. And I guess that's because of their personalities. Let me see. Who else can we think of? Because, you know, this is a big tournament, and it's a big betting tournament. You know, the U.S. Open is the most wagered tennis event in the United States. I think that because, obviously, it's United States. And now you have legalized gambling in New York and New Jersey, so you've got that. I would say another player that I would think that has some weapons that can cause you some real problems, cause Carlos Alcaraz real problems last night, is Hubert Hurkacz. I think Hubie's going to take care of some business. His biggest problem, though, is that he just lets things get to him. But he's another one that I think needs to have a big U.S. Open.
Yeah, he's kind of been stuck in that zone between like 10th and 20th in the rankings for quite a while. He's got a big serve. It's a huge weapon, but he hasn't really been able to improve any of the other aspects of his game that allows him to maximize on that serve. I thought when I saw him retire Roger Federer at Wimbledon, and that's exactly what he did. I'll get criticism for saying that, but he was the guy that played Roger Federer in his last match at Wimbledon. And when I saw him play this year again at Wimbledon, the serve's there. The tools are there for this guy, but he needs to add to it. He needs to add a few big ground strokes in there to really back up. If he can improve his return game, because I looked at Wimbledon when I was studying the form, and Hurkacz is right up there on serve game. He's a top five player on tour this year with his serve game. But when you look at his return game, he's lucky to be in the top 100. He's just not a good returner of the ball. So if he can start getting more balls back in court, putting more pressure on the opponent, he's going to go from a top 20 player back into the top 10. And this is the time to do it. The hard court's going to work for him.
Well, you would hope. He returned a lot better against Alcaraz. But he leads the tour in aces on the hard courts by 84 over Taylor Fritz. I like Hubie, though. I like his attitude. He fought last night. I'll give him that. He doesn't really lay down for people. He's never out of it because of his serve. But yeah, his return is shaky. He's also really tall. And I don't think I think the ground strokes for a really tall kid are the last thing that come for you. I think.
So let me throw one at you, you know, because we've talked about this guy a bit, and you and I have lost quite a lot of money on this guy. Felix Auger alias Simi, how big is the next few weeks? And I'm talking Cincinnati, I'm talking US Open, and after US Open, because he's got a lot of points bagged after US Open. This kid can't win a match at the minute, and he's ranked 12 in the world. So he got there. What's gone wrong?
Wow. He's lost that aura. You know what I think has happened? You know, the year he was hot, if you remember, he was traveling all year with his sister. And now he's not. And I think he's distracted. You know, maybe, you know, all those whispers in his ear that you can be number one and you can be the best ever and you have the game and you have the look and you have the attitude and the charisma, whatever. And I think it all got to his head. He's got a ton of points to defend. I would say that his confidence level is probably below zero. And that was probably the best part of his game. You know, he's one of those guys that paints the lines, right? And that looks really good on TV, right? It does. Just looks great. And then when things get tight, that ball goes out. And then when he tries to over-adjust, that ball lays in the middle of the court. And it's off to work time. And that's what they do. They go to work on him. He leaves the ball too short. He's been very inconsistent. He's not utilizing his weapons correctly. He's not getting around his forehand enough. He's too close to when he tries to hit an inside-out forehand. He doesn't step out anymore like he used to. He used to get way out there, like Stefano Tsitsipas does. Now, maybe it's two steps. So I think it's a combination of he's probably distracted. The pressure is enormous. And perhaps he started to believe some of his own hype and some of the things that tennis celebrities were saying about him. And I think that he's in for a very difficult time because you do not want to go into Cincinnati and then into New York playing like horse shit. And he's played just like that. And he'll be the first to tell you. So that's what I think. I just think his whole everything is off. But everything revolves around that forehand, that movement, and that ain't there. That's my opinion.
So you think it's maybe more a mental thing because, like, arguably he's got one of the most successful coaches on his team. And he's got a guy coaching him in Tony Nadal who's probably looking at the results for the last 6 months and wondering what he's signed up for because he ain't used to a player under his tutorship effectively playing the way that this Felix has been playing.
I think that's part of the problem, actually. You know, Tony Nadal is a great coach. of one of the greatest players of all time. You know, you can tell a lot by how somebody, the coaching, you know, you can get into a situation, it's pretty hard to screw up Rafael Nadal, you know what I mean? But now we've got the next one. I don't say he's a bad coach. I love Tony. But I think it's a big difference between being the nephew and the uncle, that relationship where he could actually, you know, speak to Rafael in a different way when it was necessary, the way that a family member would speak to you. As opposed to a kid like Felix, I don't know if he has that same kind of communication. You know, I'm sure the respect is obviously there, but it's not the same thing, you know? It's not. So I don't think it's the coach. I don't think it's anything other than the fact that Felix has gotten distracted. Or maybe he's just not as good as we thought. You know, sustained excellence in anything is difficult. In tennis, it's damn near impossible. You know this better than anybody. So I guess what I would say is that he has a long way to go. But I think he needs to return to some simple things. I think he needs to stop trying to be Rafael Nadal and just go back to being Felix Auger-Aliassime. And he should do just fine because he was doing just fine before that, if you remember. So we'll see. But I'm not sold on him. I would not be surprised, honestly, if he goes out in the first round in Cincinnati. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get past the third round at the U.S. Open. That's my opinion on Felix.
Well, you know, you're the expert on that one.
I don't know about that, but thank you. I make money off him, though, now, because I stopped, you know, feeding into that hype. I stopped, you know, that's the biggest thing in tennis, too, is you have to be a little more realistic about some of these things. You know, I've seen some crazy numbers, too, mostly with Felix. There's no way Felix should ever be a two to one or 3-1 or 4-1 favorite anymore. If anything, if he's playing a top 50 player, it's a pick 'em at best.
I think the betting spread on him is because he looks flashy, a bit like when Gael Monfils plays. You often, up until recently, obviously Gael's older now. He's, I think, 36. But in his sort of 20s, Gael Monfils, you would always get bad money on him because the people liked the way that he moved and he looked flashy and he did those dives on hard courts and crazy stuff like that. And it's something that I think just it was attractive to people to put money on. So you would never, ever get a good price on Gael Monfils. And I think there's a bit of that with Felix, that he looks the business, but he just doesn't deliver the results.
Well, he appeals to the woke crowd mostly. You know, they would love to see a person of color be a champion. I don't care what color they are. I just love watching champions play. You know, maybe that's one of the problems, too. Who knows? You know who else I think really needs to have a big U.S. Open? Is Stefanos Tsitsipas. He has the game to whack those guys out on a hard court. He grew up on the same surface in Athens. I mean, he's played on that surface. He knows how to play on a hard court, especially a type of surfaces they have at the U.S. Open. But I think he needs to have a big one. You know, he won in Los Cabos. Good for him. He ditched Washington. That wasn't a dumb move. It's a lot nicer in Los Cabos. But I think he has to. I just, his early round exit in Toronto was predictable. But he needs to get out of his own skin. He's another one who needs to stop listening to some of the people that he's listening to and go back to hitting that monster inside-out forehand he learned down in Greece when he was a kid. That's what I did. But I think he has to have a big one.
Well, it can't go any worse than it did last year for him, where he lost in the opening round to, I think it was Colombian, yeah, really low rank.
Yeah,
low-ranked Colombian kid. And,
yeah, he got whacked out quick.
You know, Tsitsipas, he just doesn't look like he's going to win a big one at the minute. You know when Andy Murray was coming up and we would talk about when is he going to win one, and he was knocking on the door and he was getting to finals. And Tsitsipas is getting to finals, right? He's been to two Grand Slam finals already. He's knocked on the door, similar to Murray, but I just kind of struggle to see. With Murray, it always felt like he was going to kick the door down at some point. It was just going to happen for him. But with Tsitsipas, I kind of worry that it's not going to happen. He seems to get there every now and then, but he doesn't look like the guy that's going to kick the door down. It looks like more like he might blow up in an early round just when you think that he's on a hot streak, which it's kind of frustrating for me because I could see him winning a Grand Slam. I just suddenly, with the rise of Alcaraz and Djokovic still around, Medvedev's looking like he's playing well again, I suddenly don't see Stefanos in this US Open final. So the question is, if not now, when?
Well, that's a tough one. I don't know what it is, but when he was a kid, I thought that he would be pretty good, actually. Actually, the truth is I didn't. But I thought because of his situation, you know, because he had people helping him out, you know, most of us did. And but his father was the coach. And his father doesn't really know much about tennis. You know, his mom is the real tennis player, but she didn't say a whole lot. I think there's a block there. You know, sometimes guys just get really stuck and they're stuck where they are. And that's not to say that's a bad thing because this kid did a lot of things from a country that really didn't financially support him that much. They couldn't afford it, bottom line. And they had two of them coming up. You know, Sakkari too, so they had to try to help her out. And Valentini was playing pretty well at that time too. But then when I saw Stefano win the Eddie Herr, I thought, you know what? Maybe he's got a shot here. And then he came out and turned pro and he won those four satellites and, you know, never looked back. But maybe it's more like I've gotten this far, and if I wait long enough, somebody will get out of the way. But I don't think he's. I want to say he's going to. It's hard to say he can't win a major when he's been to two finals. I just think he's stuck. I think there's quite a few players that we talk about that are stuck. I think that a kid like Jannik Sinner might be stuck. I think Jannik Sinner needs a big US Open, Craig.
I don't know if he needs one as big as some of the others do. Like he's 21, right?
Right.
Tsitsipas is 24.
Yeah, 24.
So I still think there's an upside on Sinner. Like it could be a couple of years before he gets there. I thought he had a pretty good showing at Wimbledon. Not as good, obviously, as the previous year, where I think he may have gotten around. I think did he get around further the previous year? I can't remember, but he did okay at Wimbledon. I mean, like US Open last year, Sinner got to the quarterfinal. If he repeats that again this year, gets to the quarterfinal, I think that's a good US Open for him. If he
Okay.
gets to the semifinal, I think we're talking this guy's got an upside that we've not seen yet. So he did get to the semi this year at Wimbledon. I knew like one year he played Djokovic in the quarters and he lost to him in the semis this year. So coming off the back of his last slam, he's done pretty good because at Roland Garros, he was shocking. He cost me a little bit of money at Roland Garros this year with his second round exit. And you quite correctly picked on the magazine covers and the other external activities that he was engaged in, and I did seriously question whether this guy was someone who was going to win things. But he's actually had not a bad season. He's semi-finals in Monte Carlo and Indian Wells, final in Miami. So the Indian Wells and Miami results are the ones I'm looking at. It's a final and a semi-final in the US already this season. I think that's been pretty good. He's going along in Toronto. He got a bye because Andy Murray pulled out. So yeah, I think he's improving. He is improving. If he gets to a semi-final at the US Open, I think we could come away and say that this guy's had a really successful time at the US Open, and we might start penciling him in next year and wondering, can he reach his first final?
I think he's a model pretending to be a
I know
tennis
you
player.
do, but you know, you can't argue with the results. If he
No,
gets
and I'm not.
to the finals, we can't argue with the results.
I'm not arguing with the results, but back in my day, and this is a funny thing, this girl I know, right? She was bragging to me about some tennis player she used to date. And so I looked the kid up, right? He never even won. He won like two junior matches in Puerto Rico, but she claimed he played on the tour. And I said, you know what? It's really hard to play on the tour. And then her next thing was, she said, but he's modeling now because he makes more money. Of course he does. Because in my day, that was a joke. If you were modeling clothes, that means you were a crappy tennis player. That's what that means. It's an insult, actually. But I like Sinner. I like his game. He's got a big serve. He is young. He is distracted. But he has a, you know what? He has a tough match tonight, though, with Gael Monfils. Monfils is a guy who's not going to walk off the court without his shirt weighing about 15 extra pounds with sweat. He's going to put you to work out there. And he is probably going to be the fan favorite, but he's also a 3-1 dog against Sinner. I think Sinner got lucky with Murray pulling out, to be honest. I would have loved to see that match. I was looking forward to see that match. But that's a tough one tonight with Monfils. I'd like to see how he handles that. If he can straight set Monfils, I mean, straight set him, whack him, like 2 and 3, I'll believe him.
Is Darren Cahill still on board with him?
Who?
Darren Cahill. Is he still on board with Sinner? He was for a bit.
Yeah,
I don't know,
think
he's
so.
Still,
yeah,
I saw involved or not.
I saw him in the box. He's still with him, yeah. Maybe he's not with him in Toronto. But
I don't know. I was just curious as to what his situation
no,
there was.
No, that's still the same situation. He's with Darren Cahill. And Cahill has done wonders with him, really. He's calmed him down a bit. But I think he's just a distracted guy. Who else can you think of that needs a big U.S. Open before we start talking about weapons and picking women underdogs, WTA underdogs, and looking for weapons? You got anybody else on this men's list you think?
Yeah, of course. Alexander Zverev, he's on the combat show. You know, he ripped his, his Achilles or something like that when. He's been, was that an ACL? Yeah, it was pretty horrific, whatever he did.
Yes, it was.
So he's been on the comeback trail sort of this year. He's quietly been making progress. He didn't have a great Wimbledon, to be fair, but he did reach the semifinals at Roland Garros. He's not defending any points at the US Open or Cincinnati or any of these places, so I think for him, like, he's ranked 16 in the world. It's a free hit. He might be able to get himself back closer to the top 10 with a good run. We know that he's got ability when he's dialed in. I think it's, for him, this is an opportunity to reestablish himself. If we're looking for others in and around the sort of the top 20-ish area, Tommy Paul probably needs to write things at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know I like Tommy Paul. I make a lot of money on Tommy Paul because you always get a good price on Tommy because he's not the big name. He's not even the biggest name US player out there. But Tommy Paul, I think Tommy Paul needs to look at making the second week. You know, he's probably going to go seeded, top 16 seeded in there. He didn't really perform last year at the US Open. I think Tommy just needs a bit of luck and he needs to get to the second week. I think he can do that. We've seen him. He's capable of doing that. I would love, and he's from like New York, New Jersey or something like that, isn't he?
Yeah, he's from New Jersey, yep.
Yeah, I'd love that kid to have a really good run here and establish himself. And the other one that kind of came to mind and he's fallen off the radar since Wimbledon, American player, is Chris Eubanks. I think a lot of people are going to be looking forward to seeing how he does at the U.S. Open.
And in Cincinnati this week. Zverev pulled out of Cincinnati. So we'll have to see. I like what you just said. I agree with those things, too. I also would like to add Novak Djokovic on that list of players who need to have a big U.S. Open.
Is he playing at the minute, or is he just going to wait until the Open comes around?
He's playing in Cincinnati. He hasn't withdrawn yet. He decided to skip Toronto and go to Cincinnati instead. So I think he has.
That's a strange one because he's had quite a lot of joy in Canada over the years, hasn't he? He's won that one like 3 or 4 times.
I don't think he can come into the country because of his vaccination status.
Oh, has Canada still got some?
I don't know. It's hard to tell who's doing what these days, but I think he needs to. You know, he was really disappointed after Wimbledon. You know, he ran his mouth that whole 2 weeks, remember?
So let me put this one out there. If he doesn't have a successful US Open, do you think he might retire?
Yes. He's got
like just the end of the season, and he would say, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, I wondered if it would be at the US Open or if he went to Australia and didn't win there, because Australia is basically his house, right? He goes there, he wins. It's like when Nadal goes to Paris. I just kind of feel that this Djokovic retirement is coming probably sooner than Nadal's retirement or Murray's retirement. I get this impression that he may just pull the plug overnight, and you might not even know this is the last time you're watching him until he gets beat and he says, yeah, I'm done.
Yep, that's how it'll be with him. He doesn't really have any ties in the tennis community. He doesn't owe anybody anything. But I think if he doesn't win the U.S. Open, it's going to dawn on him. Father Time caught me. And because these kids don't even, like, respect him. If you notice when they play, there's not even a respect there anymore. Maybe it's a respect, but it's not a fear. They're not intimidated by Novak Djokovic anymore. Once you lose that aura and they see you lose a few times, these young guys get a little frisky. Carlos Alcaraz is the friskiest of them all, though, because he's not afraid of shit. And that's what I love about him. But I think Joker needs to have a big one. And I can see him walking away and never looking back. I don't see him being invited to things. You know, maybe Wimbledon will invite him to a party, but I don't think so.
Well, he's got he's won it enough times. He's got the club membership and all that sort of thing. So he can turn up when he wants.
I know that. But when they have special ceremonies, you know, maybe they don't ask him. You never know with these people. But we'll know what Novak does, because we'll see it on Twitter. Because his rabid fan base of Twidiots and illogical tennis people and groupies will be running the GOAT conversation for the next 40 years from the second he retires. It's really funny watching those guys, though, because anytime Rafael Nadal or Roger Federer or anyone for that matter does something nice for someone, you'll get 7,000 posts of Novak Djokovic giving people M&Ms outside a tennis club. You know what I mean? Because they cannot stand the fact that their man is not number one. You know, he may end up being the GOAT, but he's probably the most unlikable champion that we've had in the sport. I mean, people just don't like him. Look at the way they treated him at Wimbledon. They're not going to treat him well at the U.S. Open either. I promise you that. Those liberals in New York are vaccination Nazis, and they're not a big fan. But I think he needs to have a biggie. And there's one other one, and that's Casper Ruud. I think we spoke on him earlier, but he got to the finals last year. That's a mountain of freaking points to defend. And he crashed. I think he crashed out of Toronto yesterday, right?
I don't rate this guy on a hard court. I've said it quite a lot of times. He's an exceptionally good clay court player, and that's fine. Through history of tennis, there's been people who have played a lot better than the clay. But I don't see this guy being a regular finalist on hard courts, and you're right, he did go in three sets, and it might have been Davidic Fokina he was playing.
Yeah,
I watched about 5 minutes of it and then I turned it off. I was busy with something else, but he did eventually lose, I think, in the third set tiebreak. He's not a guy to me that looks supremely confident that he can dominate people on a hard court. He's got a very nice tidy game, but I just think he's a guy where I think if he gets to the quarterfinals, he's had a good time on a hard court. If he comes up against a Medvedev or an Alcaraz or a Djokovic, he's not going to win. I actually think, like, against a top 10 player, he'll have a struggle on his hands against most top 10 players. So I'd be surprised if he reached the final again.
Well, no, I would be too, and I think he would be also. I think no one was more surprised than him when he got to the final. Because remember, he made jokes. See, I'm not just a clay court player. But he's a great kid, though. You know, he's a credit to whatever it is he does. An exceptional golfer. Just an all-around good kid. Who happens to be a great clay court player. And a above average hard court player. I think if you get to the finals of the U.S. Open, you're an above-average tennis player. Even Emma Raducanu is an above-average tennis player in my eyes, just for winning the U.S. Open. Good for her. When is she coming back, Craig?
Probably about the same time Jeannie Bouchard will come back.
Jeannie's out there. I saw her. She got took out the other day. Yeah,
Emma Raducanu's not coming back for over a year. Let's put it that way.
If ever.
Wrist injury. How many players have come back from a wrist injury and are playing at a higher level? I'm not just like talking about current players, but Del Potro, Dominic Thiem.
Nobody.
Once your wrist goes, can't do. Del Potro was exceptional. He came back and he made a Grand Slam final. I think he won Davis Cup. But Davis Cup, obviously, that's a team event. But you just look at it and you're like, once you get that injury, you can't mechanically hit the ball the same way that you were hitting it before, because that's what's been doing damage. So you've got to change the way you swing at the ball to not do damage to the wrists over time. It's just unfeasible. You don't come back from that kind of injury at the top level. We look at people who have come back from crazy injuries, but they're not wrist injuries. You look at Andy Murray, metal hip, the number of people who have come back from like knee reconstructions, but a wrist injury, I don't know anyone who's come back from a wrist injury at a really, really high level and managed to sustain that for a period of time. And at Emma Raducanu's age, I'm sorry to say this, and there'll be a lot of people on Twitter will be sending me hate messages about this, because Emma Raducanu's got this Djokovic-like fan base that, you know, she can't do any wrong and she's a perfect player and whatnot. They're going to have to accept that even at her age with this injury, it's probably over. She might come back for a spell. She might get a year, 2 year spell without injury, but it's pretty unlikely, given the injury that she's got, that she's ever really going to come back and be a significant player on the tour.
Well, it's all confidence is what it is. It's the same thing with my Achilles. You know, I can walk now. I'm up to about a mile.
But you ain't doing marathons, right?
I'll never do that. I'm just happy that I can get up and walk to the bathroom. But when you hurt your wrist, you know, I've seen so many of these armchair pundits telling people, especially like Dominic Thiem, what he needs to do. It ain't your injury. The greatest fear is re-injuring it, because you've already been through hell. This last year has been very difficult, and I'm afraid to re-injure it. The same
have
as these guys.
You've seen Thiem's backhand. He can't hit the backhand like he used to hit it. He physically can't get that rotation. With the wrist finishing position now on his backhand's entirely different.
Well, look at his grip. It's a little different too. He can't full Monty anymore. He can't rip it. That's the problem. See, that's what these armchair pundits who never picked up a racket but think they're experts don't understand, is that that hurts to finish. And he's afraid to tear it again. You know, that's the real that's the real problem behind injuries like this. It's not the recovery. He's fine now. Just like I'm pretty much fine now. But you don't want to go through that again. So you're never going to go all the way, because you know what happens when you did. And that's where he's at. That's where a lot of these injuries at. Emma, though, she's a different character altogether. You know, I don't care if she's fully healthy. She ain't worth it. She's not worth your time. She's not worth your money to pay to watch her play, because she doesn't try. She doesn't train. She doesn't train 6 hours a day. She was getting little blisters on her hands from training 6 hours a day. Come on, stop it. Her past coaches have all been very, very kind to her, because they feel sorry for her. Now, I know this because I have an inside too. And the reality with Emma Raducanu is actual tennis players and people feel sorry for her, because her parents are running the show. They have no clue what they're doing. They've cashed in so big. Anyone with any sense, and now I get capitalizing on a U.S. Open win, a historic one. I get that. But your kid already had issues mentally. 2 months prior, she crumbled like a cookie and had to be basically helped off the court because she had a mental breakdown. and you're going to give her 13 sponsors, $200 million. What kind of pressure do you think that was? And here's the reality, is that she knows she got lucky at the U.S. Open. She knows that because she has not shown any of that since. She doesn't have the confidence. She didn't have the confidence when she stepped out on the court in California a week after, 2 weeks after that, after the U.S. Open win. You could see it. But when she walks in the locker room, she's a Grand Slam champion. They got people carrying her bags, man, because she's a Grand Slam champion. I think she's going to be a one-hit wonder. She's going to end up very wealthy because, you know, she's an attractive girl. She's already made a lot of money. I hope that her parents have protected that money for her because she's the one out there earning it. And that's the other thing. These young people, Craig, and I've gone through this as a coach with some, who basically support their parents. They are the meal ticket. And that's a lot of pressure because now your mother and father aren't your mother and father anymore. They're your dependents. Yet they're still telling you what to do. In most situations, the player tells the coach what to do. In this situation, the father dictates everything. And like I said, people pity her. But I don't think she's going to go anywhere, even if she was healthy. You know, the revolving door coaching situation is stupid. It makes no sense. But that's a British thing. I coached this gal. She must have had 14 coaches by the time she was 12, Craig. She won a grade 5 tournament, a tiny win in Ireland, and they thought she should turn pro. And I laughed my ass off. I said, she'll be lucky to play in college. She did. That's as far as she went. But that's where we're at with Emma. She's not coming back. Forget all that. She's not going to want to, and even if she does, who cares? She's still the same person she was before she won the U.S. Open. A 150-ranked player who has big holes in her game and got real damn lucky, and good for her. There we go.
So that leads us on to weapons and people weapons. Who may lack a weapon. And
now she has a weapon.
Well, she does, but there's certain people who we talk about regularly or the media talks about regularly winning a Grand Slam who don't have a weapon, and they don't win the Grand Slams because they don't have a weapon.
Jessica Pegula.
Yeah, first U.S. player on the list, I would imagine.
You want me to run him down?
You start with Jess Pegula.
Okay, well, Jessica Pegula is a great athlete. I've coached almost 40 years. I've been in a game 54 years, I'm sorry. And you know what? I've never seen a kid in her situation excel in tennis like she has. And I think she's great. I think she is fantastic for the game. She's done a lot for Coco Gauff. We'll talk about her in a moment. But, she's a quarterfinal player. She's got that game steady, but there's really no weapon. Do you see a weapon there?
No, it's all a lot of effort and a lot of heart, and it must be so destroying for her, but you don't look at her and go, there's a serve or there's a backhand or she can just blitz that forehand from anywhere and win a point. No, not really anything there that makes you think that she's going to ever, you know, you put her on that court against Swiatek and she's not going to beat Swiatek because Swiatek's got weapons.
That's exactly right. She doesn't. You know who else doesn't have weapons? Ons Jabeur.
I've said that many times.
Yep. Not a weapon in the world. I don't know where you get or where these reporters get these things. She's another one with a pretty big following. She's a terrific person, by the way. But I don't think she's a great competitor. I think one of her weaknesses is her competitive nature. She's not competitive.
I think she's too nice. I think she's all about people liking her, and she needs to, you know, see if you put her up against Sabalenka. Sabalenka would kick you in the teeth when you're lying down if it was to win a Grand Slam.
Well, that's just it. She would.
Yeah. Ons Jabeur would be over, you know, making sure you're all right, picking you up. Not in the same way that Djokovic does when he comes to net to check that you're injured. Ons Jabeur, she would genuinely come around the net and you should bring the chair on the court for you to sit on and
call the trainer for you.
Yeah, I don't think she would stab you when you're on the floor. I think she needs to do that if she wants to win something. I don't think she's got it.
She's the one who takes the bullet for you.
You can go to the next one on the women's on the list as well, because Caroline Garcia's next in the rankings, and she's exactly the same.
Yeah, but she's got a big serve, Craig.
She does, but she's just too nice.
She's second in aces. But yeah, to win a major, I think she's nice. She is too nice, but she's had a good... I'll tell you what, though. You can say what you want about Caroline, but she's done really well with what she has. I mean, she may never win. She's won a doubles majors. Those are great. Her serve is big, but I think her biggest thing is that she's been in the shadows for so long that it's real tough to escape that. And I don't think she wants to escape it.
Is it a Caroline thing? Because like it took Caroline Wozniacki, who is now back, a very, very long time. Another player with no weapons, Caroline Wozniacki. But she did somehow manage to get there. God knows how she did it. But through persistence, she did manage to arrive at a Grand Slam title at some point in her career.
Oh, yeah, that's true, huh? But I just don't... I think that she's just terrific, but just not there. Now, that's not to say she can't win, because she's won. She had a hot year last year, if you remember. I like her a lot. You're never going to have any BS in her matches, you know? She's never going to... She's never going to wipe out lines on the clay court. She's not going to do any of that garbage. But at the end of the day, she just doesn't. She has the serve, though. But see, when she's an underdog, though, Craig, that serve can make you money. Because if she gets that serve going and gets some free points, and that's what you need on the WTA. If you're looking for underdogs, and people comment to me all the time, Craig, they say, you only play underdogs. Well, that's not true. Yesterday, I played a live favorite. Minus 111, though. But normally I play underdogs. And if they don't have a weapon, then there's no point. Because you have to have a weapon on the WTA Tour. You have to be able to find a way to win free points. And she's got to serve, Caroline does, but not much. And the rest is pretty good. I mean, she's 46 and 21 over the last year on our court. That's not bad. You win 70% of your matches on the WTA Tour anymore, and that's not too bad. Someone else that the weapons, when you talk about weapons, though, you're talking about Arianna Sabalenka has a weapon, a real one. You know, what's that?
It's not just the physical weapons that she's got, though. I mean, she's built, I know she's built like a tank. You take one look at her, she looks like an athlete. But mentally, she doesn't go away either. Earlier in her career, yeah, she looked like that player who was always going to get to the semifinal and not get there. But now, and it might be that some of this Ukraine bullshit that's been going on in the background has toughened this kid up, because I think some of the questions that she's faced has made her an absolute monster mentally. She's just not going to be fazed by these journalists and these people criticizing her and asking her questions about political situations and wars that are absolutely nothing to do with her. It's turned her into something entirely different.
Yeah. Now, she kind of crumbled a bit at Wimbledon, but you know what? That was to be expected. It's hard for, you know, can you imagine walking into your local pub, open the door and everybody boos you? That's what Arianna Sabalenka goes through every single day on the tennis court now. I mean, they can't even practice, these kids. And I have a real hard time with that, because these young people have grown up playing tennis together since they were little kids. Now some of them have families, and they're introducing each other to their kids. This is a tight little unit. They might not hang out and be pals, but this little, this thing with this Ukraine thing, and the way that Elena Svitolina and Kostiak have gone about their business has just disgusted me. I root for Elena Svitolina to lose every time she plays. I really do. I like to see her lose, because I'm just so sick of it. The way they do this, they refuse to shake hands with people they've known forever over something that person did not do. I mean, it just didn't make sense. But that's what these young people are going through these days. And it's really sad. But Sabalenka has a real weapon. She can turn your lights out. You know who can turn your lights out? in a hurry is Alicia Parks. That's an interesting one because, you know, someone said to me the other day, you bet on Alicia Parks. I did. And the reason I do, and I'm not worried about the, I know for a fact that it's going to be a 3-hour whatever. I've sat through more of those in my life than I can even care to admit to. But you know what? I didn't give a rat's ass because Alicia Parks says one thing that a lot of these girls don't have, and that's a monster serve, and she can win points. She's inconsistent, and her inconsistency drags the other player down. Just ask Belinda Bencic all about that. You know, I picked up Bencic the other day in game, in the third set, Craig, 2-1 dog. And I ended up breaking even for the day, thankfully. But when you're looking at these things, Alicia Parks, what do you think of Alicia?
I think she's interesting. I think, as you said, it's not very refined. It's
she's raw, man.
It's hard to play against, right? Because most players, from my experience, they like to build a rhythm. They like to be able to play particular set points, you know, they want to, I don't mean a set point, but, you know, they have a way they play the points, they have shots they're going to play, routines that they're going to follow. When somebody comes in and doesn't allow you to play that routine because they play such an erratic style of tennis that you can't just go onto the backhand and pin them in the corner with your better backhand, or you can't line up your forehand down the line because you have no idea what they're going to do next. It's very, very difficult to play someone like that because you can't get into a rhythm. You can't start playing the tactics that you want to play. You've then got to go and play her tactics. I think it's erratic, but I think it works for her. And I think that's why she's up in the top 50 already.
Well, that's what it is. You can't get a rhythm at all. Because, you know, it's really hard to play someone who doesn't smile, doesn't move for the ball at all. Basically, if you hit it to her, she won't step in. She does sometimes, but the majority of times she just stood there. Like her match, the one she won against the other American girl earlier this week, she really didn't do anything. She stood, hit balls in the bottom of the net, scowled. That's another thing. She scowls. She puts you off is what she does. And it throws you off. And you have to have a lot of experience to get through that because she'll lull you to sleep and then she'll ace you four times because that's what she does. But she's a great underdog, especially in the first round. If she qualifies, I think she still has to qualify for Cincinnati, if I'm not mistaken. So if that's the case, and if she does, playing at in a U.S.-based tournament, she's an absolute underdog for you in Cincinnati and at the U.S. Open because of her weapons, Craig.
I mean, she's not going to be on the radar for a lot of people either because she's kind of a fresh face. She's not been around that long. So I think she will fly under the radar a little bit and you'll get a pretty good price on her in the early rounds.
I think I got, again, I can't remember who she played now, but I got, I guess it was $166 as an underdog in the first round against another American. So you're going to get that price for her. And like I said, she can turn you out. Another one who has weapons, and I was really thrilled to see her, and this is one that you could probably, she'll be playing in Cincinnati, is Jen Brady. Jen Brady has the serve. She's missed 2 years through various injuries. You know, she parted ways with her coach because they overworked her. That's another thing. Sometimes you get into these situations where you trust the coach and the coach doesn't really know. So it happens. It is what it is. But her serve is big. She's been impressive in her return. She looks fit. She looks confident. And she's knocking down those aces. And that's what you need to do to win on the WTA Tour as an underdog.
She's the one to play in the first round at the US Open. If she gets somebody ranked in the top 30,
oh yeah,
you're going to get a huge price.
And you're going to win money off that. Who else do you, can you think of on the ladies tour, like you love to play as an underdog because she's got a big serve or a weapon?
There's not too many with the big serve that I play. I play Yelena Ostapenko quite often because she just hits the ball like she wants to eradicate the ball every time she hits it.
Oh yeah, she cracks.
You know? And I know she's a bit like Parks, as you said earlier on. The word erratic and Ostapenko pretty much go together. But when she's hitting the ball through the middle of the strings, she can be almost unstoppable because she hits it so beautifully. I also like Madison Keys. I think it may just be the consistency that Madison plays with, but Madison is one that I play a lot. Those two are obviously, they're kind of more top 20. As I go down the list a bit, there are a few I sometimes play outside of the top 20. I still play Bianca Andreescu every now and again. Obviously injury problems, but when she's on, she's on. I like Sorana Sestea, Romanian player. She was a bit hit or miss for a while, but as she's gotten older, I've just found her a lot more reliable. She's managed to... She used to really just hit that forehand too long, too often, but she's refined that a little bit, and she's really solidified her place in the top 50. So she's one I look out for. I have a look at who she's playing, and I try to size up whether I think... that'll work for her or not. And then I'm just going to go down the list a little bit further because there's a few further down. I'm just having a quick look at the lower end.
Right.
On the clay, obviously we're not on the clay at the minute, but I like Sorribes Tormo on the clay.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Another one, nice forehand. It's very difficult to play against her on the clay. Her serve's quite tidy as well, actually. She's not been as good on the hard courts recently, but on the clay, I'm quite happy to play her. And obviously, she's been dreadful recently, but Leila Fernandez is always kind of dangerous. I think she's got something. I think she's probably been affected by losing that US Open to Raducanu, because I'm pretty sure in her head she was going to win that. But I think she's going to come again. I think she's got a lot of firepower. And I'm pretty sure she's only like 20 years old still. So I really keep a close eye on who she's playing. I often jump in if I feel that she's going to have a good advantage.
Yeah, there's a couple more I want to add before we part ways. We already hit an hour. That's pretty good. You know who I like a lot as an underdog is I like Samsonova. She has a big serve. She wins matches. You know, she's a toughie. It takes a while sometimes. You have to have a little patience. If you're someone who constantly blames athletes for your betting losses, then tennis is probably not the sport for you. Ludmila Samsonova, Kudermetova. I like Veronika Kudermetova a lot. The other one I like to play is Quiwen Zhang. I like her Zheng, that one, not the Zhang. And I like Alexandrova a little bit too in these situations. I used to like Coco Gauff as an underdog, but you're not getting her anymore. She's being helped by Brad Gilbert now. What do you think of that?
He must see something in that forehand that he thinks he can fix.
No, that's not what it is. No. That basically what it means. He can't fix anything. He could barely fix his own. He's not a strategy or a strokes guy. If you ask him what a forehand grip looks like, he couldn't tell you. He'd have a hard time. He's not the guy you want teaching your kid. What he sees, though, two things. Dollar signs. But what it really means is that Coco's parents have finally given up trying to fix the flaws, and now they're just going to teach her how to win ugly. And that's what she's been doing, is winning ugly. I don't think it's going to last long. I don't know how they'll be able to stomach Brad for a long time. Brad's a very smart guy, but Brad never stops talking. Not once. And if it's not about tennis, it's about the Golden State Warriors or any one of a thousand other things. Because the guy is one of the most cerebral human beings that I've ever met, Craig.
Yeah, have you ever met Greg Rosetsky? He could give Rod a run for his money.
Oh, yeah. But here's the difference, though. Greg is not as smart as Brad Gilbert.
No, but he's got himself on TV, dude, and he's making money out of it.
You know what? That's another thing. These announcers, the announcers that I watched in the Fernandez-Haddad Maia match were pathetic. I have never seen a bigger group of homers in my life. They actually got somber when Haddad Maia won the second set. And she came back big to win. And it was exciting. And they were just dead. But as soon as Fernandez won a point, they all got sparked up again. I don't know who it was. It was on Tennis Channel Plus. Two British people for sure. And they were both awful. The girls, though, the ones that they bring out, the color people, are horrific. Just horrific. Just horrific. But
well, these people that are putting on color commentary, they don't know what color commentary is. They're people that are just rolling out there with no experience.
Jensen Brooksby was behind the mic. He didn't know what to say. That's the problem. They're trying to give these kids an opportunity to look for second careers, but they bring the and I don't know what insight the 21-year-old Jensen Brooksby has, because he didn't show any of it. Maybe he was
not on the court anyway.
He doesn't even have it there. He's another one with a wrist injury, and he talked about that on this Tennis Channel. And basically, what he said is, "We'll see." You know, he's not even.
You know, I sent you that post about, it must have been about a month back, where some tennis blogger on Twitter was ripping into John McEnroe as one of the most offensive and worst commentators on TV, and he was getting like 2 million. I don't know. It wasn't even 2 million. I think it was like 300,000-400,000 British pounds to commentate on Wimbledon for the BBC. And this guy was offended by it, and he found this woke brigade that were all backing up his opinions. John McEnroe has won tennis events. If you want to listen to somebody providing commentary, you want to listen to somebody who's been there and won it, who has the experience, who knows what it's like to be out there. You don't want to listen to somebody who has gotten through the fourth round once in their life. What more can you want? You have the voice of somebody with that experience under their belt, who understands the game inside and out, understands how the players are feeling, who technically understands all of the shots being played on the court. And people would rather listen to Johanna Konta. What could Johanna Konta tell you about winning a U.S. Open?
Well, you know what? She doesn't have to, but if she can't do that, which is fine because most people don't win, you know, that doesn't make them bad color commentators. What makes them bad at color commentary is their lack of insight. And when they speak, you can see why they weren't very good tennis players, because they don't understand the game. It's pretty simple. But we're going to close right now with this. I'm going to give them two names of two color commentators, two female ones, because people say, he's always picking on the females and always picking on the black girls. I'm going to give you two that I enjoy tremendously, and I'm going to tag them on Twitter because I love them both. Chanda Rubin is a tremendous color commentator. She's also a very good player. She also calls the match very well. And the other one is, Andrea Petkovic. She's been doing some stuff for Tennis Channel recently, including last night. And she's just fantastic because she just breaks it down for you real simple and makes it simple, but also makes it fun to learn about the game. And that's what you really want. The color commentator is supposed to provide insight. I don't want to listen to one of these play-by-play guys going on and on like it's a goddamn fucking funeral. And that's what the British guys do. Or they tell these weird stories. Oh, she's climbed a mountain. She's ranked number 290, dude. What mountain did she climb? You know, or She's just off form this set. What do you mean off form? She got broken once. She gets broken once every set. What are you talking about? And it just got me fired up. Sorry, Greg. I just can't stand these people.
You brought a great point. Anja Petkovic is actually fascinating. I know Anja. I've spoken to her a few times when I've been on the tour. She's obviously mid-30s. She's slightly younger than I am. Anja is, English is not her first language.
No.
German's her first language, but she's also kind of part Serbian, part Bosnian. I think her parents are from the old Yugoslavia before it split into a variety of different countries. So English is about her like third or fourth language, but she's able to communicate in English better than most like naturally English speaking personalities that they put on these commentaries. She's got a better grasp of the English language and how to use it than most of those do, which is quite entertaining when you realize that this kid's, she's not like a media trained personality. She's coming to it late. But she's just, she's actually a huge personality. She's a really fun person to be around, a lot of charisma, and very much a people person. She's not forgotten where she's come from. She doesn't forget the average person on the street, and she's not afraid to make fun of herself either. She's very much a fan as much as she is a player. But she's a great person to have on color just because of the fact that she's such a good communicator, such a people person. I think that's a really great shout for somebody who's vastly underrated and probably overlooked by a lot of broadcasters.
Well, yeah, that's right. You know, her English is getting better too. Every time she does it, she gets better. She's fantastic. I hit with her probably 15 years ago at a junior tournament, warmed her up because no one would... You know how it is in the junior tournaments. But she's a beautiful kid, too. What a nice...
I always felt bad for that kid because, like, she got a semifinal, one Grand Slam, and a couple of quarterfinals. But she... I always thought, like, you know, she got to the top 10, and that was really good. I thought, you know, she might just get there one day. She might get a bit of luck on the clay. But she didn't. I think she ranked, like, as... high as 9 or 10 in the world. So she had a really good career and she's made a lot of money out of it. And it looks like she's going to have another good career now.
Well, let's hope. As long as she stays away from those English broadcasters, she'll be fine. Because those guys are the worst. I just can't believe it. Craig, it's going to be an in-game betting weekend once again for me. You can follow me at BetStamp. The Flash is the username. And I promise you, you'll probably win some money because... it seems I do good on the weekends, Craig, but not so much during the week. Maybe it's because of work. Who knows? But I'm looking forward to live betting all day. I got the tablet set up. I don't use the big screens like you do. I prefer to have my tablets. I have 3 tablets, Craig, that sit right underneath the bureau. And the big screen is above it. So I have my laptop in the middle. I have an extra high stand for the middle laptop. For the middle tablet, so I have tablet on the left, tablet on the right, tablet behind the laptop, and I also have the TVs playing. So I've got all the matches going, and it's all right in front of me, and I can make my bets, and I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, you know how it is. I've got 6 screens here. I've got a couple of tablets, laptop, and then 3 monitors here. So if I've also got the TV in the background that I can use as well if I need something. So when the opens on, I'm going to have at least 6, maybe 7 matches on the go between my laptop, my tablets, and my monitors. And I'll be probably betting in play as well on some of the early round matches.
Oh, yeah, it should be fun. All right, next week we'll be back. We're going to get you more prepared for the U.S. Open. We'll talk more about some in-game betting strategies. We'll do all those kind of things. Instead of giving you picks, we'd rather teach you how. For Craig Doyle, I'm Phil Nations. Thanks for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.